This is Building Bridges, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nat.
Port workers in the Bay Area turn out to say an injury to one is an injury to all.
The Bay Area's International Longshore and Warehouse Union, the ILWU Local 10, is under attack by the Pacific Maritime Association after the rank-and-file dock workers voluntarily took action in solidarity with the national We Are One action for the Wisconsin public workers.
The Pacific Maritime Association is suing Local 10 because the members shut down the port in support of other workers. This is a serious attack on the right of workers to withhold their labor to support other workers, and along with support from the 87,000-member San Francisco Labor Council, Local 10 workers continue to demonstrate their solidarity with workers fighting the attacks on collective bargaining rights.
Clarence Thomas, former secretary-treasurer of Local 10 and rank-and-file activist in Local 10 and very much a strategic organizer of the Million Worker March, is now still flushed from today's rally, and he joins us. Clarence, it's good to have you on.
It's good to be on the show, Mimi and Ken. Thanks for having me. This has been a great day for not only Local 10, but for rank-and-filers all over the country.
Why?
We had a wonderful rally today at 11 a.m. this morning. It started at 555 Market Street in San Francisco in front of the Pacific Maritime Association headquarters. The Pacific Maritime Association is the group that represents the employers. That includes shipping companies, terminal operators, and stevedoring companies. And today there was a rally. There must have been anywhere from 350 to 500 people who came out in spite of the threat of rain earlier today. It turned out to be a glorious day in terms of the weather. And we assembled in front of the PMA for the purpose of protesting the charges that have been leveled against the ILWU. We see this as an attack on not only on the local, but to silence voices of working class organizations all over the country. This is not the first time that the Pacific Maritime Association has taken such action. They did so in May of 2008 when the ILWU shut down all 29 ports on the West Coast to protest the war in Iraq and Afghanistan and demanding the withdrawal of all troops from the Middle East. This was the first time in American history that workers have engaged in a strike that was not centered around some issue pertaining to the local as on such matters as wages, working conditions, and so forth. So it was a political strike. They, meaning the PMA, subsequently dropped those charges as well. The San Francisco Labor Council adopted a resolution calling for developing a defense committee for ILWU Local 10. And so today, Tim Paulson, who is the secretary-treasurer of the San Francisco Labor Council, did speak. Before I forget, I would just like to read something that was sent to us from Jim Cavanaugh, who's president of the South Central Federation of Labor in Madison, Wisconsin. It reads as follows. At our monthly meeting this past Monday night, the delegates of the South Central Federation of Labor, by unanimous vote, directed me to convey to Local 10 our heartfelt thank you for the solidarity your members showed on April 4th. The South Central Federation of Labor consists of 95 labor organizations representing some 45,000 union members in the greater Madison, Wisconsin area. Whether it's racist apartheid in South Africa, imperialist war in Iraq, or fascist plutocracy in Wisconsin, Local 10 over and over again shows us, quote, what a union should look like, unquote. Please convey our appreciation to your members and kick some PMA ass on April 25th. In solidarity, Jim James A. Cavanaugh, president of the South Central Federation of Labor. I think that it is instructive to also note that the South Central Federation of Labor in Wisconsin voted on February 21st, 2011, in favor of a general strike if the union-busting bill passed the Wisconsin legislature. Well, we all know what happened. But it is important to remember that there was a great deal of pressure from labor tops as well as the Democratic Party for the rank-and-filers of the state of Wisconsin not to engage in any kind of action at the workplace, but to devote their attention to such things as recalling Republicans and getting them out of office. We don't believe that that is the way in which we're going to be able to mount an attack to stop the onslaught against the working class. We think that the only way to build a real fight back is by having workers to take action at the point of production. It's also important to underscore the fact that on April the 4th, the 43rd anniversary of the assassination of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who was in Memphis for the purpose of supporting sanitation workers who were in a battle to also have collective bargaining. 6 months before Dr. King was assassinated, he was in the city of San Francisco for the purpose of launching a seven-city fundraising tour to be headed by such luminaries as Harry Belafonte and Joan Baez. And it was on that occasion that Dr. King spoke at our union meeting on September 21st. He was made an honorary member of Local 10. But one of the things that he said at that meeting was this. He said that the Negro Freedom Movement and the labor movement represented the bulwark of democracy, meaning that that was the main defense for ensuring democracy in the United States, that coalition. The action on April the 4th was very important, but unfortunately there was not any other action comparable to what ILWU Local 10 members did. And I think that everyone needs to understand one thing. This was a voluntary rank-and-file action. Each and every member made a decision not to go to work on that day, to stand in solidarity with the workers in Wisconsin and the 15 other states where there are attacks on not only collective bargaining, but also public services themselves. The other thing that is important to note is that this action resulted in what I would define as being an organized act of resistance. And I think that when we look at the attack on the working class, the attacks on public services, that this is a much broader policy matter. I would describe it as being the domestic neoliberal agenda, where the attacks on collective bargaining of the public sector workers include the cutting taxes on the rich, eliminating social services, privatizing the public sector, deregulating the economy, and busting unions. And this is something that is not just a part of the Republicans. It is the Republican and the Democratic Party. And all we need to do is to look at what the Democratic Party has done since the election of President Obama. Labor contributed tremendous amounts of money, but they also gave tremendous amounts of support. Boots on the ground. What has labor gotten for that? Well, here are some of the things that they were very much interested in having and did not get. We did not get the Employee Free Choice Act, which was going to make it easier for us to organize workers to join unions and to stop retaliation from the employers in efforts to do so. What else did we not get? We didn't get Medicare for All, because President Obama immediately took the issue of the public option off the table. What did we get? Tax cuts for the rich. What else have we gotten? Another war. There is Iraq, Afghanistan, and now there's the war in North Africa, in Libya. When we look at the bailouts have gone to the banks, the bailouts have gone to the corporations, the bailouts have not gone to stop the foreclosures, it has not gone to public education, it has not gone to create jobs. And so what we see is that the goals and objectives of the Democratic Party are not the same as that of the working class. And we believe that the best way for labor to protect itself is for the rank and file to be in the forefront of that. Unfortunately, we don't have the same kind of rank and file democracy in many other unions as we do with the ILWU. So the question now becomes, when are other unions going to stand up and start taking the same kind of action that was proposed by the South Central Federation of Labor in Wisconsin? And that is to entertain the issue of a general strike, but to, in fact, begin to engage in such activity. We're only going to be able to have the political pendulum begin to swing the other way when we take action like we did at the point of production on April 4th, 2011.
Well, Clarence, people, I think, are beginning to realize that we need a more militant labor movement, and they're looking around for examples of such a movement. And they can look no further than Local 10 of the ILWU, the longshore workers, and more especially the members of the ILWU, Local 10, for that inspiration.
I think that when you examine our history, it is very clear that the ILWU was born in struggle. And the first thing is that in 1934, the idea of a workers' control hiring hall, where workers could actually dispatch the jobs without the shape-up, where the bosses could pick and choose who could go to work, and engaging in such things as ethnocentrism, favoritism and nepotism, and all of those sorts of tendencies, when the bosses could pick and choose and keeping the workers divided. So that hiring hall was one of the chief objectives of the 1934 strike. And so what happened in 1934 was that not only was there a strike of all maritime harbors on the West Coast, but there was also a general strike, which was precipitated by the killing of one of our members who was shot in the back. And then that resulted in a four-day general strike in San Francisco, where the entire city of San Francisco was shut down. And at that time, San Francisco was the leading international maritime center in the world. The idea of the union having the right to dispatch jobs was looked upon as being a part of a Bolshevik conspiracy, and the shipping companies were perceived as being the shock troops of capitalism. So out of that struggle came the right to have a hiring hall, the right to have collective bargaining on the West Coast for longshore workers. And then when you examine the kind of leadership that we had from people such as Harry Bridges, who was an immigrant worker from Australia, who was a Marxist and who understood the class struggle. And something very significant took place during that longshore strike, and that was this. Many blacks could only work on the waterfront as scabs, while there were a few blacks who were a member of the union. The majority of blacks who had gotten hired on the waterfront had actually been brought into the industry by the employers as strikebreakers. In 1934, it was no different. But Bridges did something very strategic. He called upon the black clergy to allow him to come to the churches in San Francisco and in Oakland to appeal to the black community to stop crossing the picket line. And he made a commitment that if they were to join the union, he would do all that he possibly could to make it possible for blacks to be able to come into the union. So when that occurred, when the community began to support the strike, that changed the momentum. And the other thing that's important is that Bridges was able to point out something that's very instructive for us today, and that is this, that black-white workers are inextricably linked to black workers. And this is something that I don't believe that the We Are One agenda has adequately addressed. There's been a lot of talk about these attacks on collective bargaining being attacks on our middle class way of life. But the middle class reference to many black trade unionists, and I'm speaking for myself now and not for Local 10, has become a code word for white, because very seldom do you hear anything about the number of black workers, the number of workers of color, women who make up the public sector workers in this country. And that's very, very clear. So we believe that the trade union movement has, or should I say the labor movement, has an obligation to speak not only for organized workers. The majority of the workers in this country are unorganized.
And it's very clear that workers from Local 10 of the ILWU, like Clarence Thomas, are why there's such a militant action, and that's what we need to reclaim the organized labor movement for the rank and file, and to stand up and speak out as they do. Support Local 10, the ILWU.
People can say, can send information of support committee at defendlocal10@sonic.net. defendlocal10@sonic.net. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Here we go. One, two, one, two, three.
Let me tell you of the sailor, Harriet Bridges is his name. An honest union leader that the bosses tried to frame. He left home in Australia to sail the seas around. Sailed across the ocean to come to Frisco town. There was only a company union, and then the bosses had their way. Us workers had to stand in line for a lousy buggy day. When up spoke Harry Bridges, said us workers must get wise. Our wives and kids will starve to death if we don't get organized. Oh, the FBI is worried and the bosses, they are scared. They can't deport 6 million men, they know. And we're not gonna let them send Harry over the seas. Fight for Harry Bridges and we'll build the CIO. We built a big bonfire around the mats and lines that night. We threw their fink books in it and we said we're gonna fight. You've got to pay a living wage or we're gonna take a walk. We told it to the bosses, but the bosses wouldn't talk. We said there's only one way left to get that contract signed. And all around the waterfront we threw our picket line. They called it Bloody Thursday, the 5th day of July. 100 men were wounded and 2 were left to die. Oh, the FBI is worried and the bosses, they are scared. They can't deport 6 million men, they know. And we're not gonna let them send Harry over the seas. We'll fight for Harry Bridges and we'll build the CIO. Now that was 7 years ago, in the time since then. Harry's organized thousands more and made them union men. We've got to try to bribe him, the shipping bosses said. And if he won't accept a bribe, we'll say that he's a red. The bosses brought a trial to deport him overseas. But the judge said, he's an honest man, I've got to set him free. So they brought another trial, and to free him was the plan. But along with Harry Bridges stands every working man. Oh,
The FBI is worried and the bosses, they are scared. They can't afford 6 million men, they know. And we're not gonna let them send Harry over the seas. Fight for Harry Bridges and we'll build the CIO. Oh, the FBI is worried and the bosses, they are scared. They can't afford 6 million men, they know. For Harry Bridges, and we'll build the CIO.
The Ballad of Harry Bridges was written by the Almanac Singers and sung by Arlo Guthrie.
Step by step, the longest march can be won. Many stones can form an arch, singly none. And by union, what we will can be accomplished still. Drops of water turn a mill, singly none.
And now selections from Wharf Rats to Lords of the Docks, The Life and Times of Harry Bridges, with Ian Ruskin performing in the role of Harry Bridges.
Now, my mother, my Irish Catholic mother, she was always writing home to Dublin. And she had a large hand, so the address took up most of the envelope. Well, she sent me off to the post office. I was about 7, and I always had to buy penny stamps. So I had to stick stamps all over the front of the envelope, turn it over, stick them all over the back to make up the postage. One day I went home, I said, "Mama, why can't I buy shilling stamps?" And she said, "Never, because the shilling stamp has a picture of the King of England on it, and no son of mine is going to lick the other side."
Mask on. You ain't got too long.
Then the police started pushing us back to the intersection of Mission and Stewart Streets just off the waterfront. When the police car arrived and shots were fired, 2 men lay dead. Scrap iron, crude oil bound for Japan, we refused to load it. Didn't like the way they were bombing those cities in China, and we figured it just might come back at us one day. Same way as we refused to load some German ships because of Hitler, and some Italian ships when Mussolini invaded Ethiopia. An injury to one is an injury to all. And I'll tell you something else. Interfere in the foreign policy of our country? Sure as hell. That's our job. That's our right. That's our privilege. That's our duty. Foreign policy is too damned important to be left to the striped pants set in Washington, D.C. I said then that if all the jobs on the dock were to disappear, if they were to dwindle away and all that was left was just 2 jobs, just 2, and I had my way, I'd make damn sure that one of them went to a black worker. And here's the thing. See, I have every right to be prejudiced because I was brought up in a racist country. I was taught that white people are superior. But I learn better, see? My dear judge, if Harry Bridges is deported, he is more than likely to organise the whole British Empire against us. He is a dangerous man and should be kept where we can watch him. Our very good friends of the British domain have more than their fair share of troubles already. Patriotically yours, signed, I See Clearly.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.